Good morning. Great to see you. Such a beautiful day. One of the few non-rainy days we had this week. And hey, thankful you're here on this less of an hour Sunday. I told the 9 a.m. they were definitely like the better Christians than y'all because they came 9 a.m. on an hour that we lost. But I'm just joking. But again, grateful that you're here, whether you're here in person or watching online, man. Thankful for your presence. Thankful for you being here, man. We've got an amazing service today beyond just the message. Man, we're baptizing 6 people this service, and we are so excited to be able to watch people take their next step in faith. And just last service was able to baptize one of my students. And then this service I'll baptize 3 more. So just an honor for me as a pastor. Hey, as we jump into our Heroes and Villains series today, one thing I want to remind you, especially if you're a guest today or new, oftentimes when we click through our slides as pastors or we have them on the screen, I know sometimes we click too fast because we're moving through the message and you don't have an opportunity to take a picture or write it down. One of the ways you can follow along and have all my notes, all the slides in one place, is if you have the Bible app on your phone, just open the Bible app, go to the More tab, click Events, and click Forest Park. Those 3 clicks will get you all my notes, all the things you'll see on the screen today, and you can follow along so you never miss a thing. But again, we're excited to kick off our Heroes versus Villains series today, talk to you a little bit about what that means. But in this series, one of the things we're going to be doing for however long we go, we haven't put an end date on it yet. It's one of those series where, like, we set it on the calendar. We say, let's just go until people beg us to stop doing it. So that's what we're doing with this series. It's just going to go until you guys say, man, I'm tired of this series. But we're excited about it because what we're going to do is we're going to look at characters in the Bible and their stories. We're going to take stories of people you may or may not have heard of in the Bible and show you their story from beginning to end. And one of the reasons we're going to do this is because there's a lot we can learn from characters in the Bible. We can learn what we should do and also learn what we shouldn't do. And in fact, when it comes to stories, especially biblical characters, we kind of have this facade we like to put around them where it's like, I only want to read the nice parts. I only want to read the pretty parts where they do the right thing and they have these great triumphs and they do these amazing miraculous signs. And we oftentimes like skip over the bad parts. Like, right, Father Abraham, who your kids are probably singing about in KidVenture right now. Right, Father Abraham, a patriarch of the Jewish faith, was a man who was given a promise by God that he would have children that outnumber the stars in the sky, had incredible faith, had incredible perseverance, but was also a man, if you don't know his full story, who was in Egypt one day and decided he was going to sell his wife to Pharaoh so that he could marry her so he could get away without dying. So a man who also did some things that are a little bit questionable, a little bit maybe embarrassing. And so what we want to do in this series is give a full picture of these characters and their stories, both the highs and the lows, because we can learn from both of them. And so we're going to dive into a bunch of different stories throughout this series together. But today, I'm not doing a character story. I'm doing your story. Congratulations, we're going to look at your life today. No, I'm just kidding. But we are going to look at our lives as heroes and villains and what we do. And so one of the things about stories is that human beings, you and I, we are hardwired to love stories. Our brain is actually hardwired and functionable to the point where we can honestly understand truth 100 times better when it's in context of a story. And one of the beautiful things about stories that you'll see today, not only in the message but in baptism, is that stories help us make sense of the seemingly random events that happen in our lives. As you get to the end of the service, we'll read baptism stories before they're baptized. And what you'll hear is that sometimes in the middle of the darkest night, in the middle of the times where they had no answers, these people being baptized, they were confused, they were lost, they didn't understand why they were going through what they were going through. They were just bad events, but as their story progressed, they saw how God would take the pain and turn beauty into it. And so stories help us see that sometimes random events aren't so random. In fact, they're events that make sense the longer we go and read throughout the story. And so stories help us make sense of the things in our life that don't always seem to line up with what we think we should experience. And again, that's why baptism is so powerful. That's why Jesus taught most of his hardest truths through parables, which were stories. He understood that as human beings, the best way to communicate the hard truths of who he was and what the kingdom of God was like is through parables, through stories, so that his followers, those people in that region, could understand exactly what the kingdom of God was like and exactly who Jesus Christ was. So the goal of this series is to dive deeper into all of these stories as much as we can and learn from the good and the bad of these characters we read in the Bible. And the truth is, in the grand scheme of life and stories in general, we all love heroes, don't we? I mean, we're talking about heroes and villains, and heroes are someone that we all love. And we understand that a good story needs a hero, but it also needs a villain. And the Bible is no different, right? The Bible in the first three chapters of the entire story makes it very clear who the hero is and who the villain is, right? God created all things beautiful and very good for his people. He wanted Adam and Eve to be able to experience life and experience this creation in a way that was flourishing for their souls. God was a true hero. And then the serpent, the villain, the enemy comes into the picture, deceives Eve, and causes them to fail and to fall. And so from the very beginning, when we read in Genesis 3, we see the Lord said to the woman, "What have you done?" And the woman said, "The snake, the enemy, the villain tricked me, and I ate." So even within the first three chapters of our faith story, we see that there's a clear hero in God and a clear villain in our enemy. As humans, when it comes to stories, whether you know this or not, you may not know this, what you really want in a good story is a hero that you can relate to and a villain that you can root against. Every good story has a hero that we can look to and say, "I want to be like that person." Or you can relate to and say, "He stands for the very same things I stand for. Justice, goodness, virtuous. He's loyal." We look to heroes and we say, "That's someone I either want to be or reminds me of myself." And we look at villains and we say, "That's a person that is not like me and somebody that I don't align with. Their values, the way they look at the world, the way they interact, the way they hurt people." Every good story has a hero that you can relate to and a villain that is just so downright mean and evil sometimes that you have no choice but to root against them. How about I give you some examples? Instead of just talking about it, like, just think about these things. When we think about cinema and we think about good stories, think about some of the most heroic people we've seen in movies all throughout history, right? Like Rocky. How many of you were alive when the Rocky, like, first came out? Like, you remember when it came to theaters? Okay. We're not going to date ourselves too much, I understand. But again, Rocky, if you haven't seen the Rocky movie, some of you younger in the crowd, man, it's a great movie. Still today, a great movie. And everyone wanted to be like Rocky. Why? Because he illustrated what it meant to get back up. And in a time in the 70s where we needed that more than ever, everyone had to have that mindset of, we need to get back up and fight. And guess what people do now? Every time they go to Philadelphia, what do? They run up the stairs just like Rocky because they want to be like him. He's a hero that we look up to. Another franchise that started in the 70s, right? Star Wars. Obi-Wan, someone who was loyal, virtuous, did the right thing, fought for the good guys. Everyone would be like him or Luke Skywalker. And what toy did everyone play with in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, right? Lightsabers. Everyone wanted to be like them. They want to be like the Jedis. So we see another example of how this is influencing the way we see heroes. Another one for the people who are younger in the room who don't know these last two slides. Here's one you should know. Right, Captain America from the Marvel franchise. Someone that we see fights for the little guy. Fights for the people who can't fight and stand up for themselves. And we look at him and we say, man, that's someone I want to be like. I want to be able to stand up and fight against the people who get picked on. The smaller people in the world who feel like the world's so evil to them. And so we see these cinematic heroes that we relate to and want to be like in some ways. But we also have cinematic villains that we despise, right? Like Darth Vader. One of the most notorious villains in all of cinema. Stood for everything that most people, 99.9% of people, stand against. You also have Heath Ledger's Joker, right, in The Dark Knight. Somebody that was just conniving, manipulative, deceitful, pitted. Batman having to choose between two people's lives like they were toys. Right, we see what evil looks like. How about the last one I'll give you today? This, to me, in my opinion, the scariest movie I've ever watched. And the villain from it, right? Hannibal Lecter, Silence of the Lambs. If you're with your parents today, please, this is not an endorsement to go home and watch that movie, but I am saying, for me, one of the scariest movies I've ever seen, it is a villain that is downright evil, deceitful, manipulative, someone we would never say we aspire to be like. And the problem with this is movies make it very clear who is the hero and who's the villain. Literally within the first 10 to 15 minutes of The Dark Knight, you know who the villain is. It's not a surprise. And we know who the hero is. The line is pretty obvious. Joker's the bad guy, Batman's the good guy. The problem is we take that same mindset into our life, which is not cinema, it's reality. And we think life is as simple as you are either a hero or you are either a villain. But the truth I want to explore today is that unlike cinema that makes it very clear who's the good guy and who's the bad guy, life does not work that way. The line is very blurred, and it's blurred based on what you value most, the kind of things you enjoy, the kind of people you root for, right? For me, some of my heroes could be your villains, and some of your villains could be my heroes. It just depends what you value, the things you hold true, your fandom, your experiences, how you were raised by your parents, all determines how you define who is a hero and you define who is a villain. So just to illustrate this point, I want to show you two heroes of mine. I have two heroes. I have more than two heroes, but I'm just going to illustrate two to illustrate the point that heroes and villains are subjective. My very first hero is this man. George, this is your favorite quarterback. Where's George at? George loves this man as a Broncos fan. This is the greatest quarterback of all time, on the greatest franchise of all time, with the greatest coach of all time, winning 6 Super Bowls, 7 on his own. So you've got somebody that most people consider a villain. However, I consider as a Patriots fan a hero. In fact, this is actually a photo I took off my closet wall. I have a shrine built for Brady in my home. But in all seriousness, right, to me, not only do I love Brady because he was the quarterback of my team, but really, I mean, it was a guy who learned to tune out the noise, didn't listen to what everyone had to say about him. He walked into every practice every week working as if he wasn't guaranteed the starting job, never took things for granted, always put the team before himself. And so we have someone that I look to and I look to examples, not because I love that he played for my team, but those are virtues that I want to be part of my life, putting people ahead of myself, never taking anything for granted, working hard. How about outside of sports so we don't get too crazy up in here? How about one of my pastoral heroes, Tim Keller, if you don't know, started Redeemer Presbyterian in New York City. He died last year, unfortunately, with his cancer battle. But one of the things I love about Tim Keller the most is not necessarily that I agree with everything he said. In fact, there's some parts of his theology I don't agree with. But what I love about Tim Keller the most is he would have these town hall meetings at his church, and he would invite anyone and everyone from New York City to come and to talk and debate about God and faith. New York City is still not, and wasn't at the time either, a very religious place. It was very diverse, and many people hated Christianity. Yet Keller let them into the church to talk to him, and oftentimes, if you go back and listen to those debates, they were very mean, nasty, calling him an idiot, saying that this little fairy tale didn't make any sense. Yet one of the things I love about Tim Keller the most was the fact that every person he interacted with, he treated them with kindness in his response. He never stood on the stage and acted like he had all the answers and you didn't. Even at his old age, he still truly showed what humbleness and kindness look like in the face of people who didn't agree with him. That's something that I want to be a part in the virtue of my life. That's the reason why he's one of my heroes. How about we go to our villains, right? Not your villains, my villains. So these are two of my heroes. What about my villains? Who are some people that I don't jive with? They're not my cup of tea. My students in this section will like this one. Here's one of my villains. What a terrible, terrible man. I mean, come on. I mean, every time he takes the field, I am rooting against him. I don't care if he's playing Perquimans High School football team from down the street. I mean, I am rooting for Perquimans. I mean, there's no way on God's green earth I will ever root for this man or his coach or his tight end or his tight end superstar girlfriend. This is every time they take the field. I mean, I'm hoping 0-17. Not one win. I mean, that's what I'm rooting for. This is somebody that just, you know, and that's what I'm trying to say. It's so funny because for some of you over here, this is your hero and this is your villain, right? But this is my hero and this is my villain. And so again, we laugh about it and it's meant to be joking and light the room, but how you define heroes and villains is subjective. How about one more villain for the room? I said this last service, I'll say it again. I truly don't consider Taylor Swift a villain. I just put this in here to trigger half the people in the room because I know all the Swifties are like, I'm going to, like, on Facebook right now, like, blasting me on Facebook in Forest Park about how we hate Taylor Swift. It's just a joke. I really don't have anything against her. I just wanted to get you to wake up a little bit. But again, right, we define heroes, we define villains based on what we value most, the way we were raised, the fandom that we have, and how our life has been going. But the problem is when we decide to really define heroes and villains based on what we think heroes and villains are like, we get into trouble. which is why I want to mention just one of my 3 points today, which is when it comes to heroes and villains, the unfortunate part about our lives is we create rules for a game that is set up to make us win. What I mean by that is the problem with wanting human beings to be as simple as you are either a hero or you are either a villain is you come up with standards and expectation and rules for who's a hero. And guess what? Those rules and expectations almost always make you look like a hero. Because it's human nature to want people to look like us. The people like me are the heroes because they share the same ideologies. They act the same way. They value the same things I do. Just think about how you handle conflict. I said this in a message last year. I'm just quickly go through it. Like, think about how you handle conflict and mistakes with people you don't get along with. If someone you don't like makes a mistake and they hurt you, they don't do what you think is right, the thing we will say is, look what they did to me. Look what they said to me. Look how they reacted, and look at all that they put me through. But when we make a mistake, it's, well, you weren't there for the whole conversation. Well, you don't know the backstory to our friendship. It's been like that for a while. See, the problem is, as human beings, we want to be able to judge our enemies based on what they do, but we want people to judge us based on what we meant. We want people to be able to judge the people we don't like just simply based on what they do, what they say. But when it comes to judging us, we want to hold our hands up and say, wait a second, that's not what I meant. Yeah, I said that, but that's not what I meant. I'm sorry that you didn't understand me properly. Right, so in life, that's how we operate. I operate that way if I'm not careful. I want to be able to judge everyone simply based on what they say and do. But when it comes to judging me, hold on. That is what I did, but that's not what I meant. And so we set up imaginary rules for a game that doesn't exist so that we can come out as the winner and the people that aren't like us always come out the loser. It is an us versus them mentality that our culture, our world, and unfortunately our churches have created. Where it's this mentality in an election year, anytime you turn on the news, it's a, we've got it right, we're trying to do our best to help, and they've got it wrong, and they're trying to hurt us. It is a us versus them mentality that pits people against each other, where there's a clear line between the right side of history and the wrong side of history. And I'm on the right side of history. And if you want to be on the right side, you've got to move from your side to my side to be considered on the right side of history and a hero. If you stay over there, you're a villain. It is an us versus them mentality. And aren't you thankful that that mentality hasn't seeped its way into the church? There's sarcasm in my voice there. Right, you wonder why Christianity has 45,000 different denominations, because every one of them thinks they've got the truth and everyone else, the 39,999 other denominations, got it wrong. Why we can stand on one side of the street and say, we've got everything right, we believe it all right, but the church across the street, they've got it wrong. It's this mindset that Paul speaks to in Romans 12:3, where he says this, because of the grace that God's given me, I can say to each and every one of you, don't think more highly of yourself than you ought to. It's clear throughout Scripture we're not supposed to be prideful or egotistical. But we know people who think more highly of themselves than they ought to. Trust me, they'll make it clear to you that they think more highly of themselves than you think they do. But God has made it clear, and Paul's reminding us as Christians, be careful. You think you got all the answers. You got a pretty high view of yourself right now. Maybe you need to back up, be a little bit more understanding, a little more graceful, humble yourself a little bit. And that's why religion has been so toxic for the church. Because really, when it comes to what I'm talking about, religion has made up rules to divide us. Religion has made up rules that don't exist to divide Christians into one of two camps, right or wrong. And religion says things like this: I truly love God because I came to church every Sunday last year. You don't love God because you missed 3 months. And I would say, please, show me the verse in the Bible that says God loves someone more because they sit in a seat 52 times a year. There is none. It's a made-up rule for a made-up game to put you in the camp of sinner and them in the camp of holy. We make up rules to divide people, and religion has done that throughout history, on all religions, not just Christianity. Religion says things like, I've got all my theology 100% correct. If you don't agree with me on every tenet of theology, you've got it wrong. You better repent and get on my side. The problem with a statement like that, assuming that we have all of our theology correct and they have it all wrong, is the fact that stories in the Bible don't really back that up. One of the most famous stories that does not get talked about a lot, especially when it comes to theological debates, it's a story of the thief on the cross. In Luke 23, there's two thieves sitting on the right and the left on their own cross next to Jesus. Jesus is suffering and dying. And one of the thieves looks at Jesus and he begins to mock him. He says, if you're the king, like you say you are, take yourself down. He's laughing at him as he's suffering. He's saying, if you really are the king of the Jews, go ahead and get down. You can get yourself down. And the other thief has a better response when he says this. We, the thieves, you and I, the two thieves, are rightly condemned. We're receiving the punishment we deserve for what we did. Yet this man, Jesus, did nothing wrong. Then he looked at Jesus and said, today, remember me when you go into your kingdom. And Jesus' response is telling. He looks at the man on the cross and he says, I assure you that today you will be with me in paradise. The reason I love that story is because it breaks down these walls of things that we think we need to have or do in order to receive God's love. The truth is, if we were in that time here, like imagine yourself at the foot of the three crosses, two thieves and Jesus in the middle of you, and you were able to ask some follow-up questions to this thief while he's hanging and dying on a cross in pain. But just go with me for a second. You ask him, hey, Jesus said you're going to be with him today in paradise. Real quick, what's your view on baptism? He would say, what's baptism? Hey, what's your view on the Bible? What's the Bible? What do you think about church leadership? Should we do it this way? Should we do it that way? What's the church? Right, this man had no understanding of these tenets of theology that we hold true today as Christians, yet he only knew two things to be true. And they're the only two things today I want to remind us that you need to believe. One, man, I am a sinner in need of saving. Number two, Jesus Christ is King. He didn't need anything else to be with Jesus that day in paradise. Yet religion comes along and says, wait a second. What do you believe about the Bible? Wait a second. How do you see baptism playing out in the church? Wait a second. How do we handle money and finances in the church? Wait a second. What do you believe about predestination and free will? We make up rules to add stuff to salvation, add things to our relationship with God that God never intended. We make up rules to make ourselves look holy and other people we don't like look evil. But the truth is, you don't and I don't get to make the rules to the game. God has made it clear what is necessary. He's made it clear what the rules are. Confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord and believe that he was raised on the third day and you shall be saved. Two things, nothing else. Number two, one of the things I want us to really get in our head as we get ready to go into this series in the next couple months is nobody is really a hero, but yet nobody is also really a villain. Now, when I say that, I know our human brains are going, wait a second, you're telling me that my pawpaw who did this, this, and this, and fought, and he's not a hero? That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is nobody is truly a hero in the sense that we never perfectly do the right thing all the time. We have moments where we're heroes, obviously. I mean, there are people all the time who choose to do the right thing, to follow God, who lay down their life, who sacrifice, who are heroic, and we celebrate them, and we should. But we are also fallen human beings who don't always get it right 100% of the time. And I know I certainly do not either. I should make sure I say do not before you get crazy. But one of the things about God's kingdom, in order to be defined as a hero, you have to do it perfectly all the time. And that's one of the reasons why we have to remember we're not the star of the show. We're not the perfect example of what it means to follow God in all areas of our life. Can you choose to do the right thing? Yes, you can, and you have, I'm sure. Can you choose at times to be selfless instead of selfish? Yes, you have, and I'm sure you do at times. But do you do it perfectly? No, and neither do I. That's why we have to be reminded of what Paul tells us in Romans 3, right? That all of us have fallen short of God's standard. Not because you're some terrible person, but because you're imperfect, you're flawed. You have a little voice in the back of your head every day when you wake up that says, today, make it about you. Today, do everything in your power to make your life better and forget other people, forget your faith. Just do what it takes to make yourself happy. And that little voice, that little motive is something you will battle the rest of your life, meaning you are not perfect. Depressing, I know. But the bad news is, yes, you're not a hero. But the good news is, you're not a villain. Right? Sometimes we go one of two extremes. I'm either the hero in the story, or I'm the villain. You're neither. And neither am I. You have beauty within you. When God created human beings, he gave you his image. He has a special place in his heart for you. You have beauty within you, and you have and do at times choose to do the right thing to the point where God uses you to bring beauty, healing, and restoration to your homes, your workplaces, and your community. You have been the light of the world at times. I know you have. I know some of you in the room, and I've seen it with my own eyes. But in 2 Corinthians 3, Paul makes an important point. He's writing a second letter to the Corinthians, Kent, 2 Corinthians, and he's telling about how he is so proud of them. The first letter was a little tough, a little rebuking. The second letter he's writing and saying, hey, I am so proud to see the way you have transformed and grown in your faith since the last time we've seen you. He says, I am so glad that my ministry, our ministry, because he had a crowd with him, that when we ministered to you, when we came to you and helped you and taught you and served you, you took those things to heart and you actually made changes. He said, we are so proud of you. Yet, in verse 5, he says this, it isn't that we ourselves are qualified to claim that anything came from us. No, our qualification comes from God. What he's saying is, even though our ministry was part of what helped you grow in your faith, we weren't the ones who made you grow in your faith. God was. We're just an instrument, just a tool that God has used to help you get closer to the Creator. We are so thankful that we were able to be used by a holy and perfect God to help you grow in your faith. And that's the same thing I'm trying to say today. Yes, you have done great things, and it's only because you've allowed your lives to be used as instruments in the hands of a perfect, loving Father to do miraculous things in and through your life and your faith. You are no hero, but you are no villain. And the great news about you not being a hero is, guess what? Jesus didn't come to call you to be a hero. Jesus came to call you to be a servant. Jesus never came and said, you must be a hero. No, he said, you must be a servant. In fact, in Matthew 23, he says this, but the one who is greatest among you will be a hero. No, the one greatest among you will be a servant. All who lift themselves up will be brought low, but all who make themselves low will be lifted up. Jesus doesn't need heroes in his kingdom. He needs servants. He doesn't need you to be a hero in order to do great things. He just needs someone who's willing and comes to it and said, hey, I'm here to serve. What do you want me to do? How can I serve my family? How can I serve my community? How can I serve my church? Jesus needs servants, not heroes. And when it comes to heroes and villains, even as a pastor, I want to be very honest and transparent with you today because I don't want to hide anything. I am, even as a pastor, no hero. I know the temptation is because we think I was blessed with a microphone and the stage to stand on today. Somehow I'm the example of what it means to follow God. But I'll tell you right now, I'm no hero. Man, I know many of you. I've let many of you down. I've dropped the ball. I haven't always done what I should have done. And depending on who you are, maybe in some of your stories, I'm your villain. And by that, I don't mean maybe you use the word villain, but maybe I'm not your cup of tea, right? Maybe you look at me and you've got to know me and you're like, that Preston dude, just not my favorite kid in the building. Totally understand. My wife might say the same thing depending on the day. But I'm no villain either, right? I know that I might not be your cup of tea because I'm too sarcastic. I'm too casual. I'm too young to have any right to be on the stage and tell you about how to live as a Christian as a 29-year-old. I'm maybe too Tom Brady fan-oriented for your liking, depending on who you are. But that's okay because I don't claim to be a hero, yet at the same time, I don't claim to be a villain. Here's one thing I know. I don't have all my theology right. There is some theology that if you said, Preston, will you go to the cross and die for your stance on free will and predestination? I would say, no, I won't. I'm 80% sure I got it right, but I'm not 100%. But if you said this one thing, and this is what I've learned in ministry over 8 years now. I've been at Forest Park for 4 of them. As I've grown in ministry, I've learned this to be true. I don't know everything, but there is one thing I am certain of without a shadow of a doubt, 100%. to the core of my soul that if you said, would you die for it, I would die for it and I will defend it to the day I die. And it's this one truth. Jesus Christ is King. I don't need anything else to know 100% other than the fact that Jesus Christ is King. And I will do everything I can as an imperfect person, as an imperfect pastor, to help everyone who comes to Forest Park know and proclaim that same truth, that Jesus Christ is King. And I will do the best I can, as flawed as I am, to love and serve the people that God entrusts to me for as long as I'm here. I'm no hero, but I'm no villain. I'm just a servant trying to help you see who the true hero is. Before we move to my last point today, I don't have too much longer. If you're here today and you are planning to get baptized, another six of us in the room, this is your opportunity now to get ready. If you want to stand up and meet Pastor Scott in the lobby, he'll be happy to direct you on the next steps because we want to make sure that's as seamless as possible. Last service, I was talking and rambling for 6 minutes trying to fill time before they came out. So if you're getting baptized today, this is your opportunity to go to the main lobby, meet Pastor Scott. He will meet you there and help you get ready for our baptism that's coming in 5 minutes. Our last point today. We are defined by a bloody cross. There is hope for you. Even as imperfect, messy, and villainous as you may be at times, God doesn't look at you and see your mistakes. And in his family, you're not defined based on how bad you screwed up, and you're not defined on how well you succeeded. Let's put it practically. Those of you who grew up in the church your whole life, like you've got this Christian thing down to a science. You know how to dress. You know how to talk. You know, I'm blessed, brother. It's not I'm good. It's I'm blessed, brother. God's good to me. You know the Christian language. I mean, you got more Awana patches than all of us combined. I mean, you've got more Bible verses memorized than you've forgot more Bible verses than we've memorized in our lifetime. You've been in church every time, right? Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. We had revival Friday and Saturday. I was there. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying, if that's you today, and that's your life, and that's your story, and that's your faith, guess what? I want to lovingly tell you that when God looks at you, he doesn't see any of that. He sees a bloody cross. And for those of you in the room that maybe had my story, didn't go to church till I was 15 for the very first time. I was an 18-year-old sitting in youth group Sunday school, and I heard the story of the flood in Noah for the first time and never heard it at 18 years old. I was just like, what kind of story is this, dude? All my friends like, you ain't heard the story of the flood? No, 18-year-old. Maybe you're here today and you don't know anything. Maybe the only thing you can say, Preston, is I know that Jesus Christ is King, but when it comes to the rest of the Bible, I'm confused. I don't get it. I can't even tell you one Bible verse from my memory. I don't even know how to pray. I tried to pray. It was too awkward. I couldn't sit in the silence. I got distracted. I have ADHD. I didn't know what to do. In fact, there are a lot of questions about my faith. I don't even know what to believe. But one thing I know is that Jesus is my King, and everything else is just kind of blurry right now. Man, I love you, and guess what? When God looks at you, he doesn't see your shortcomings. He doesn't see your failures. He doesn't see how much you don't know. What he sees is a bloody cross. Every single one of us here today watching online that can say Jesus Christ is King, you belong to God. Not because of what you've done, but because of what's been done for you. In Galatians 3, Paul says, there's neither Jew nor Greek, there's neither slave nor free, there's neither male nor female, neither hero nor villain for the sake of this sermon, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. Every single one of us, none of these things define us. Your mistakes don't define you, your successes don't define you. The only thing that defines you to this point is where you put your faith. And if you put your faith in Jesus, you are one with him. You have been made new. You have been made clean. And in 2 Corinthians 5:21, Paul makes the case that Jesus, who was the perfect example, became sin for us so that we could have righteousness through God. He says that that person, Jesus, who was not a sinner, took on the punishment that sinners deserve so that sinners like you and me could have freedom. You've been made new. You've been made clean. You have become righteous, and not because you are, but because he was for you. And the good news I want to leave you with today is this. You are not as bad as your enemies make you out to be. But you also don't have to be good enough to earn God's love. There is nothing you can do today to make God love you less, and there's nothing you can do to make God love you more. God's love for you isn't based on your ability to be a hero. God's love for you is rooted in what a true hero did for you by becoming a servant and going to the cross. His story is the story we celebrate because he is the only hero of our faith, and it's because of what he did by becoming a servant that you and I, when God looks at us, does not see our failures or mistakes or our successes. He sees Jesus. He sees what he did for us. And because of what he's did for us, you and I don't have to be heroes, and we don't have to be ashamed because we think we're villains. We are God's children because of how much he's loved us. And as we look at the stories of many people in the Bible throughout this series, I hope we'll be able to look and say, wow, in that moment, Abraham kind of looked like Jesus there when he did the right thing. And then I hope in times when we look at Abraham's story, we're like, that's kind of what Jesus said when he said, don't do that. There's so much to learn from character stories, good and bad. And guess what? There's a lot to learn from your story, good and bad. But it's when we remind ourselves, no matter how bad people think we may are or how good we think we may are, the truth still remains. Jesus Christ and what he did is the only thing that defines my life. And it's because of him that we can celebrate today, have freedom in our lives, and come to a place today right now where we're going to baptize 6 people and celebrate that they took their next step in faith, following the example that Jesus left for us when he was baptized. This is the moment to celebrate as a family. I encourage you as we get ready to welcome them as they're baptized, and not just sit there, twiddle your thumbs, look at Facebook, and hurry up and ready to get a lunch, but celebrate with them because they are following the example Jesus left for us when he said to be baptized. And this is what we're going to celebrate today. But let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your love. Your love is unlike any other love in the world. It's not conditioned on how we perform, but it's rooted in a performance that was done by a perfect man on the cross for our salvation. God, we're so thankful to be here. We're getting ready now for a time where we can celebrate those who are taking their next step. And God, as 3 of my students are getting baptized today, I'm just so honored to be a part of their faith journey. And God, to know that I don't have to be the hero for them. I don't have to be a villain for them. I can just point them to you because you're the one who does all good things. And you make all things new in spite of how much we mess up. God, help us celebrate today. Help us worship today as we reflect on their stories. And we reflect on our own stories and how much you brought us through, God. You've been so good to us, even when we didn't deserve an ounce of it. We love you. We praise you in your name. Amen. As we just wait for a second because they're still getting ready, I just want to mention one thing. I don't know why I missed this opportunity to do it in this service too. I should have done it. I don't know why. But one of the things I joke about is my villains, right? I told you Patrick Mahomes, one of my villains. I literally could have taken my 30-minute message and just simply shown you villains by showing you the entire Duke's basketball team on the screen and just going through each and every one of them. But the reality is, I think Duke fans are hurting enough already today, so I'll leave that one out of the service. But I have 3 of my students getting baptized, and Kai, who's the last person we'll baptize today. Today is actually his birthday. And so what a way to celebrate his birthday, right, that we get to see him be baptized. Marcus is also baptizing 2 of his children and his mother as well. So this is a family ordeal, not only a family with Marcus and my students, but a faith family that we can wrap our arms around each and every one of them and celebrate them as if they were our own, because this is an important step in their life, and we want them to know just how proud we am of them. So let's welcome them. I got your stories. There you go.